Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Cavs waiting on Sunday. Now they now have the Indiana Pacers to look forward to as we'll get ready for round two of the Eastern Conference playoffs. And to talk about it, we welcome in Brian Geltzeiler, SiriusXM NBA Radio, also NBA TV. He joins us right now in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How we doing?
We're doing well. Are we allowed to overlook the Indiana Pacers, or are they a team that can sneak up on the Cleveland Cavaliers and get them?
No, they can sneak up and get them. You cannot overlook the Indiana Pacers. They're deep. They're versatile. They have just enough size. And again, they go to the bench and they got a really good bench. But you saw what Haliburton can do in a big spot, and they look great in that Milwaukee series. I don't know if Milwaukee's the biggest challenge, but I think you can't sleep on the Indiana Pacers. There's a lot of players there. The thing about the Pacers, and you know, they play fast. They like to put up a bunch of threes. But here's the thing about the Indiana Pacers. Last half of the season, they were eighth in the NBA in defensive efficiency. They're a really, really good defensive basketball team, a better defensive basketball team than the one that went to the conference finals last year. So, no, there's no sleeping on this Indiana Pacer group at all. As great a year as the Cavs have had, the Pacers went further than they did last year. So for the Cavs here, it's all business right now. This is a tough, tough team that they're up against.
Maybe part of it is, Brian, that, yeah, you could take certain parts of the season. As we know, Haliburton was awful at the start of the year. And as he goes, the entire team goes. So it's hard to try to figure out. Like, if you took the Cavs and their shooting numbers the last 2 months of the year, they're dreadful. And their offense actually was, like, below middle of the pack in those times. So that's why, as a Cavs fan, it's hard, especially the games that we played against Indiana this year. You know, it wasn't the finished Cavaliers product with DeAndre Hunter, and they had injuries in some of those games too. So that's why it's tough to take a snapshot for these two teams to try to compare.
Listen, I think as a general concept, you have to be very careful extrapolating what happens in the regular season over to the playoffs. And there's several reasons for that. But the first two most important ones are, number one, how coaches coach. Because number one, a lot of coaches are going deeper into their bench in the regular season. They're going to play their starters more. Also, coaches aren't showing you all of their best looks in the regular season. They save some stuff for the playoffs. So you're definitely seeing different matchups attacked in different ways, different defensive looks and defensive coverages that you don't normally get in the regular season. Here's the other thing, and this year it's been a big contrast. The physicality of playoff basketball is back in a big way in the NBA. They are letting a lot go. They're letting guys play. They're letting players decide games. And that's different than the regular season. The regular season is a lot about letting offense happen and blowing a lot of whistles. You are not seeing a lot of whistles being blown here in the playoffs. It's quite obviously a league-wide mandate. I'm all for it. I think it's terrific. But it also makes it much tougher to look at a regular season matchup where guys are able to operate in space, get fouls when they go to the basket, and what you have now, which has some prison ball aspects to it, where big teams are just banging the heck out of each other, being really physical. Referees are keeping their whistles in their mouths and not blowing them. So, I think all those things kind of lend itself to, when you look at the regular season, there's only so much to take from it that's going to be applicable to what's going to happen here in a playoff series.
Do you like that there's that style of contrast in what they'll call and what they won't call between the regular season and the postseason?
I don't mind it. I think it's okay for the product to look a little bit different. I really do. I think that, listen, 82 regular season games are a long time. And you're going to get guys beating on each other and pounding on each other in the way they are in the playoffs right now. You're not going to have a lot of guys playing in the playoffs. You're going to have a lot more injuries. And the game itself is not going to be as aesthetically pleasing. But come playoff time, when you have the best teams in the league going up against each other, I think you have to do it this way. Listen, here's the thing about the NBA. The history of the league will tell you that the league's been at its best when playoffs are played this way. There was a huge criticism earlier this year about the homogeneous effect of NBA basketball. All teams look the same and play the same. Are we seeing that complaint right now? Are we seeing any of that right now? Every team looks a little bit different. But the one thing that is a common element here, if you're not big and physical enough, you're struggling in these playoffs. And personally, me, I'm okay with it. I think this is how it should be. I think this has been as good a first round as we've had in a while.
All right, how do you break down the Pacers and what they are trying to do? Because if you look statistically, Halliburton was dreadful shooting the basketball in the playoffs, and he runs hot and cold when in terms of aggression. But when the game was at its biggest moment, he was attacking Giannis and getting past him with relative ease, and also made some key defensive plays in that final game. So what do you make of his game, and how worried should the Cavs fans be about defending him?
It's a great question, because the Halliburton matchup to me is the single most difficult matchup for the Cavaliers in this series. Because I actually think that, Siakam, who's a factor more times than not, and certainly was in that last Milwaukee game, but I think Evan Mobley is going to handle him just fine. So I don't have my concerns there. Halliburton is the single most difficult matchup, and I think they're going to try to match up on Halliburton with some size. I think you'll see Hunter spend some time on him. I think you'll see Strus spend some time on him. And that matchup is going to be difficult. But the thing about Halliburton, what will happen is, for a guy that carries himself with such, confidence is the kind word, arrogance is probably the unkind word, but he carries himself in that way, he'll lose confidence in his game at times if shots aren't necessarily falling. So I think there is an aspect here in how you defend him. First of all, defend him with size. Be really, really physical with him. And see if you can get him off his game a little bit. The other thing that I think is going to be different, and even like with him going by Giannis, like one of the things you see in playoff series is, and you're seeing this in the Knicks-Detroit series right now, with the Knicks exclusively guarding Cade Cunningham with OG Anunoby. What happens is a great player will be able to, over the course of a long series, get comfortable with one guy guarding him and be able to figure out where those guys' strengths and weaknesses are. It's one of the advantages of a playoff series. You're playing the same team over and over and over again. I think a big key for the Cavaliers here in Halliburton is going to be to show him different looks, to continuing to roll guys at him in different ways. It's hard for the Cavs because you may give Mitchell him a little bit, but I don't want to put Mitchell on him a ton, and you can't put Garland on him. And so I think that's where things get tough also. The Cavs have two viable defenders to guard him, in my estimation. You could maybe say Okoro's a third one, but I don't know how many minutes Okoro's going to get here. But you have two viable guys to guard him, and Hunter and Strus, and maybe Mix Mitchell in as a third. I'd rather they have three really viable guys, because that's what Halliburton can do, but it's going to be two. And we'll see kind of where that goes, but I think that's the key matchup here. And with all that said, I do think personnel-wise, the Cavs are equipped to handle him.
Brian Geltzeiler joining us, NBA TV, SiriusXM, NBA Radio. Did you get a chance to see much of Ty Jerome in the last two games of the Heat series against the Cavs?
I did. I mean, listen, Ty Jerome is one of these guys that, like, when he heats it up and gets it going, he's tough. He's really, really tough to stop. First of all, the thing about a guy like Ty Jerome, like, you hear the term all the time, a floor spacer. But what he does in spacing the floor and creating the ability for Mitchell to break a guy down off the dribble and Garland to break a guy down off the dribble, it is absolutely vital for this basketball team. So when you get Jerome going, he actually takes this offense to an entirely different level. One of the great stories in the NBA this year. And listen, he can really, really handle himself. Here defensively, you wonder where you're going to hide him. I kind of figure you can put him on Nembhard and take your chances there, as strong a player as Nembhard is. Because again, I just think Jerome can match him. Even if Nembhard's scoring on him, Jerome can score on the other end. So we'll obviously see plenty of Ty Jerome minutes. But guys, this is, again, one of the best stories in the NBA. The dude has been absolutely phenomenal. He's shooting lights out right now. And really, if he can keep this going, the Cavs are a tough out.
Yeah, because we've had some silly discussions recently because Darius has not really had anything in terms of a playoff career. He's kind of struggled. He certainly struggled against longer teams. And Jerome is now in the playoffs and showing people what he could do, but he's doing it in limited minutes. And we've got players from the Miami Heat talking trash about Darius Garland. Listen to this clip from Kyle Anderson yesterday in their locker cleanup day.
If you want my honest answer, and I don't mean to throw shots at anybody or even, you know, entertain what was going on between them, but I think they looked like a better team without Garland on the floor. Now, I don't know the numbers or anything, but I think it played more into their favor once Garland wasn't on the floor for them. They were able to dictate the tempo and, you know, get more stops on defense, and it was hard for us to score, and, you know, they had more guys out there on defense. So I think once we came across that, it got kind of tough for us.
So that kind of punctuates a little bit of a conversation. It's a fringe conversation in Cleveland over Garland versus Jerome. What do you make of that?
I think that Kyle Anderson should worry about the 37-win team that just got swept out of the playoffs that he was on, okay, with a record point differential in terms of a margin of victory. That's what, like, you watch the Cavs all season. They're a better team with Darius Garland on the floor. And Ty Jerome's a very, very good player. It's what's the special part of the Cavs this year, guys, besides for the jump Mobley made, was the chemistry that developed between Mitchell and Garland on the floor on the offensive end. And yet they made is there something to be said in terms of maybe being a little bit better defensively with Jerome? But it doesn't really matter. Whoever it is, whether it's Garland or Jerome, you're going to try to hide him on Nembhard. And again, if Nembhard's going to be the one that beats you, but you're doing a good job on Haliburton and Siakam, you're going to win the series. Like, and that's just kind of silly stuff, because, and this is why it's also silly stuff, because when you get, let's assume the Cavs get through the series just for the moment. This series is not going to be easy, but let's assume they get through this series and you go into a conference final against the Celtics. You're going to need that kind of dynamic shot making in the backcourt from somebody besides Donovan Mitchell. And for as good as Jerome is, Darius Garland's a better player off the dribble offensively, can do so much more. Like, he's just a more dynamic offensive threat. I don't think there's any two ways about it. All due respect to Ty Jerome, who's had a super year. But again, it's more of a catch and shoot thing. And not that he can't play off the dribble. He's a pretty good player off the dribble. Garland's a better player off the dribble. And so I hear that from Kyle Anderson, and it strikes me as like, you know what, dude, if you're not sitting in an ESPN studio table, you're still playing in a league. It's kind of a silly piece of analysis to look at what you guys did when you could say about how you struggled, you weren't going to be close no matter who played. And I think that's the point with Kyle Anderson that we kind of have to look at here. Those are comments, obviously, guys, coming from a 37 player on a 37-win team that didn't play all that much, that just got swept. I kind of think that's the dictionary definition of speaking out of school.
Ooh. Wow. Ooh. Wow. Brian Geltzeiler, this is coming in hot.
All right. Turn up the heat.
Pascal Siakam, such an interesting matchup. He has 75 playoff games. He's got more experience than just about anybody on the Cavs in terms of the playoffs. And he's had some big moments on big teams. He's also had a bunch of moments where he has been very challenged trying to score efficiently. What do you make of that matchup with him, and how much do you think he'll be matched up with Evan Mobley?
A lot. And I think that matchup, here's the thing. I'm making an assumption in that matchup in this series that the Cavs are going to win that matchup. Evan Mobley was voted Defensive Player of the Year. Because if the Cavs don't win that matchup, Evan Mobley shouldn't have been voted Defensive Player of the Year. You can take Siakam out of his game. Evan Mobley's more athletic than he is. He's a little bit bigger. He can certainly stay with him both inside and outside. If Siakam's putting up 28, 26, and 30, that's a problem for Cleveland in this series. Because other guys are going to get points. I just got done telling you that the Hyder guy is going to be on Nembhard. And Nembhard's going to have a good series because of that. Whether it's Garland or Jerome, the Hyder defender, the one they're trying to hide, is going to be on Nembhard, which means that you're going to have to do a really good job on Siakam. You're going to have to do a really good job on Haliburton. You're going to have to make sure that Turner doesn't kill you too much. Like this, and even a guy like Nesmith, you got to make sure you match up properly. I mean, he had 19, you know, in this last game. He's a tough player. So my point being on the Siakam-Mobley matchup, if that doesn't work to the Cavs' favor, This series is a difficult, really going to be really, really difficult for the Caps, and they may not win it. And that's how vital that matchup is. But to me here, listen, Evan Mobley was on most improved player ballots. He was a defensive player of the year. We're going to get all defense teams coming out in the next week or so. He's going to be on the first team for that. Evan Mobley's been given all these defensive accolades. This is the time where you show who you are. And if Mobley doesn't do that in this series, he probably shouldn't have gotten any award, and the Cavs are going to have a problem.
Brian Geltzeiler laying it down right now. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Go ahead. I got other NBA things I want to ask
about. Yeah, So LeBron.
I wanted to ask about LeBron.
I'll do that. I'll do this instead. Eastern Conference, it looked to me like Boston never Orlando was a real threat in that series. However, it was a little harder for the Celtics than I thought it would be. Do you make anything of that?
Not really. You know, listen, they rested Drew Holiday. They actually rested. He was hurt, but he probably could have gone in two of those games, and they chose to not put him out there when they were up in the series with the thought that they just, if they could close this thing out and get him extended rest, they'd be better. Listen, Orlando's a really good defensive basketball team, but collectively, taking Paolo Banchero out of the mix, the rest of those guys in that team, you have them throw a bag of garbage off a pier and they can't hit the water. These guys cannot shoot the basketball. So, yes, it was a little bit of a grinded out series because Orlando plays physically tough in that way. That's part of their identity, but they're not a good offensive team. And so I think when you look at Boston there, I don't think it was a big deal. They didn't have Holiday the whole series, right? And Tatum sat a game that you won that he was hurt with a bad wrist. I look at that for Boston getting out in five. I think that's a win for them. Plenty of rest here. Listen, everybody needs the rest there. The more rest Porzingis gets, the better. The more rest Holiday gets, the better. The more rest Tatum's wrist gets. And Tatum was super when he came back. But more rest Tatum's wrist gets, the better. So I actually think, yes, it was going to be physical against Orlando no matter what. That's what they bring and who they are. With all that said, I actually like what I saw out of the Celtics in that series. They did a good job of taking care of business, considering they weren't fully healthy for a large portion of the series.
Brian Geltzeiler joining us on the show. So do these last years, I mean, the bounce in the first round last night to the Minnesota Timberwolves, do these last years with the Lakers mean anything to LeBron's legacy?
Yeah, I think they actually enhance his legacy. You just like, and I give a very funny example, watching a game the other night, and they put some kind of record on the screen, you know, first guy to put up this, this, and this over the age of 40. And my wife looked at me and goes, isn't this kind of a silly graphic? Who else was ever doing this at 40? Like, and I think that's where we look at the legacy. We like to be about, you know, rings, right? How many rings? LeBron James I voted him as a second team All-NBA guy. The dude is 40. No one does this at 40. So I'll say this. He's enhancing his legacy with playing at an All-NBA level into his 40th birthday. That the longevity part now becomes a huge part of that. None of the other all-time greats we discuss have that longevity part. And no, I'm not going to do this LeBron Jordan thing. I'm a Michael Jordan guy, always will be. And that's not where I'm going. But I am saying, to think that a first-round exit for the Lakers does any damage to LeBron James, I just don't find that valid. I don't think that's an opinion I would ever agree with. I think that his legacy has been enhanced by what he does. I will say this, a bigger picture regarding the Lakers. If I'm LeBron James, I'm having a one-on-one sit-down with Luka Doncic this week, like now, before everybody breaks apart, and I'm going to look him in the eye, and I'm going to tell him, you get one more year with me, but if you don't show up, forget about the best shape of your career. I'm talking about the best shape of any NBA player ever, because I'm going to be in that shape if I'm LeBron. I'm showing up in peak condition. You need to be in the shape I'm in, and if you're in the shape I'm in, and we go do this, I'll hang around for a few more years with you. If you're going to show up in this kind of condition, and like you were when you got traded here, and like you've been this entire season, I'm done after this year. LeBron doesn't have a lot of years left, okay? There's some urgency for Luka Doncic to get himself in the proper condition and be able to realize his vast potential. And that was a problem for the Lakers in this series, specifically defensively. Luka was tired. He was out of shape. He was banged up because he was out of shape. And defensively in these last two games, the Timberwolves made him look stupid. They took gross advantage of him. So if I'm LeBron James, I have to tell you, that is my big mandate here with Luka. You get yourself in shape, or I don't know how much longer I'm doing this with you.
Brian, you're outstanding. Thank you so much for the time. And I say this to a lot of people. I really hope it with you. I hope we run you down again soon. Thank you.
Guys, my pleasure. Anytime. We'll talk to you both soon. Take care.
Find him on Twitter, @BGeltz. NBA on Twitter. He's one of the best. Strong stuff. The stuff he said about Kyle Anderson. Holy potatoes. I'm struggling to say the wrong thing, and I don't want to because I don't want to go, well, the Pacers can be a good wake-up call to get you ready for the Boston Celtics. I think the Celtics themselves are a wake-up call. I think everybody looks at the Celtics as a tough team that you're going to have to really get going against to have a chance to beat. So I think that that is already there. Like, it's not just, oh, they took it serious. They took it easily.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
And then they had to take the Pacers seriously, and then they'll be more ready for the Celtics. You'll be more ready because you're playing a better basketball team than you've been playing for the last four games, but I don't think that there's going to be any punch-in-the-face moment to go, whoa, this is... No. I think that the Pacers are the Pacers, the Celtics are the Celtics, and I don't think the Cavs are going to overlook the Pacers. I tell you this, from what he's saying about what Brian Geltzeiler was saying to us about the physicality of the postseason... This is going to be a very interesting physical series here. A very interesting, very physical series. I think that you and I are going to be coming in here Monday. I think the Cavs are going to win the two games at home. I don't know what's going to happen over in Indianapolis. But I think that you and I are going to come in here going, oh my, this was a more of a wrestling match. You've said the term before. It's more of a wrestling match than we thought it was going to be. I think this is going to be tough.
Yeah, you know, it is part of the calculus you make in this series is you expect every series to get more physical. The Cavs will be, that will be jarring, I think, to the Cavs just for 10 minutes of game one on Sunday, whether it's at 6 o'clock or 8 o'clock, is that it'll be 1,000 times more physical than Indiana. I mean, than the Miami series, except just wasn't physical. Like, even in the close game, even in the close moments at the end of game two in Cleveland, wasn't physical. Like, at no point were guys getting screened to the ground, needing teammates to pick themselves up. You just didn't have that. I mean, the only thing you basically had was what? Darius Garland stubbing a toe? That was the extent of that. Your guys were never in harm's way. And Indiana knows the part of the book on the Cavs, and I don't know if Indiana can meet this, but part of the book on the Cavs has been that they've been soft. After that Knicks series 2 years ago, soft. The label was there. Everybody was calling the Cavs soft.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, it wasn't so much that they were really, really soft. I know stuff was levied at Jared Allen in that series. And boy, Jared Allen's been spectacular. There's been no softness whatsoever. In fact, it's been the opposite. But that is still the book on the Cavs until they get over the hump. And what Brian did tell us last segment is true. Indiana does have more playoff experience. Outside of Tristan Thompson, all the next guys, and then Donovan Mitchell, but all the next guys that have more experience are Indiana, because Indiana last year just went to the Eastern Conference Finals. You can call it a fluke run or whatever, but they did get there. And the Cavs didn't because they were on the wrong side of the bracket because they had Boston in the second round. So Indiana's not going to be afraid, and Indiana will be able to throw both you know, metaphorical punches, and I guess if they want to get real physical, if they want to get in the weeds, and they are deep, just like the Cavs are deep. Cavs are the better team. The Cavs are more talent. Donovan Mitchell should be the best player in the series. Evan Mobley could be the next best player in the series. Hell, if Darius has a great series, he could be the next best player in the series.
I think you're seeing a top-heavy conference. Cavs, Celtics, I think the Pacers are there, even though that their seeding would not say it. Yeah, there should be. I think the Knicks have taken a step back, and maybe that's because of injury. Do you agree with that?
I think that they've taken a...
And I think that's going to get their fan base. Like, if they're up 3-2 in that series, they play tonight, right?
They should play tonight.
They didn't play last night, so they play tonight. So they're up 3-2 in that series. I think already that's a little too close for comfort. If this becomes a 7-game series and this thing goes back to New York, I think their fan base is going to be really upset with Tom Thibodeau even more than they are right now. I think that some of the shine off of some of those players comes off for their fan base. I think it changes. Knicks fans to me are the Browns fans of the NBA. And I know the people, well, the Kings. The Knicks are an organization. They should be better than what they are. The Browns should be better than what they are. Their fan base is always waiting for the other shoe to drop. Hello. And I think that we're always waiting for a reason to be very angry with whoever is in charge. I think the Knicks fans are the same way. And I think that's part of the reason where I've always told you, if I died and came back, I guarantee I could be a very good Knicks fan. I've always kind of liked watching them, even though I've hated them at times as a Cavs fan. It just makes sense. So watching them against the Pistons has been very interesting. I think already they're at that spot. So you have, to me, a three-horse race. You just happen to be playing one of the horses. Because Boston, if they end up playing the Pistons, I think you've said it, you're just hoping that the Pistons start decking people. If it's Isaiah Stewart or anybody, the Pistons just start decking people, and it causes a problem with Boston. Physically could cause a problem with Boston because you're not going to give them a chance. I don't think I'm going to give New York a chance, even if they close it out.
I agree. Well, Boston is owned at New York.
Yes, especially, gosh, this year you are right about that. I think that the Pacers can give us a little bit of trouble. I think they can. I still see this being a 6-game series, but a 6-game series gives you a little bit of trouble, just like what I just said about the Knicks with the Pistons.
It's hard for me to see, and fans can say, don't overlook Indiana. I'm not overlooking them. I'm projecting.
Well, I think you're allowed to if you want to.
Yeah, the Cavs should beat them. if both teams are healthy, the Cavs should certainly beat them. And yeah, it's going to be tougher because anything is going to be tougher than what just happened in the Miami series. That's as easy a playoff series as maybe even LeBron has ever had. And LeBron's had some walkthroughs. This one was maybe even easier. And you saw it, most lopsided playoff series in the history of the NBA playoffs.
I wanted to play this audio here. I'll get to LeBron later on. And plus, there is a situation where a lame duck can be a very good thing. I said on Monday, and I got a lot of texts afterwards. I was getting some texts last week, and I put some things up the flagpole, you know, while the draft was going on. Because I knew that we were going to take a running back. I didn't know we would take two running backs. And it made me wonder about Nick Chubb's future. And I'd love to see Nick Chubb with the Cleveland Browns. Now, I got it on good authority from several people, not in this city. And I said this, that I think that there's a team in the NFC North that is going very hard after Nick Chubb's services. A contender in the NFC North. But they all think they're contenders. We had Jason on. Jason threw a little bit of a tidbit out there. Now I think it's the quiet part is being said out loud because I don't think that, frankly, I think that the top brass with the Chicago Bears won't shut up, and now it's been on ESPN with this. This is Lewis Riddick on Get Up talking about the Bears and a one Nick Chubb.
Nick Chubb needs to go ahead right now and be beating down the door of the Chicago Bears and saying, hey, look, I want to run behind this offensive line. I want to be a part of this. And Caleb Williams should be going, yeah, Nick, come play for us. Because think about this. Think about some of the people that we have on the perimeter now as far as us being able to stretch the field, attack every blade of grass. Not every team can just load the box and play 8-man fronts. So there's going to be space for anyone. And who's better at calling plays, depending upon how defenses are trying to play his offense, than Ben Johnson? So Caleb Williams, look, in year two right now, the sky's the limit for this young man.
So what I know, the Browns want to bring Nick Chubb back. And they are trying hard to bring Nick back. I know this. Okay? I also know, and you hear it from Lewis Riddick right there, the Bears, now they're going to make it public and they're going to go after him. They're beating down the door. I mean, if you got Lewis Riddick saying that, that means that somebody is telling them, hey, we want him really bad.
And so why are the Browns not doing that? Do they just not want Nick Chubb in that room? They want the rookies,
get
the carries?
I wonder. Now, this is my theory. I don't know. I wonder if Nick sees the draft, because the Browns have to protect themselves. He is not signed. Now, they don't want to sign him for more than what they should sign him for. They don't want to be held to anything. That's just basically good business sense. But you also want him to be a part of the Cleveland Browns. So, yeah, maybe I think the Browns might be willing to overdo it a little bit for Nick Chubb, all right? Maybe a little bit, but not too terribly much to where it's obviously a stupid decision if he were to go anywhere else. I think that Nick would probably be, this is a theory, thinking about playing for a contender this year. We don't know what the Browns are going to be. We know that the Bears are throwing everything into their offense. From what they went to in the draft to what they went to last year in the draft, you can roll your eyes. And I think I take the Lions seriously. I take the Vikings seriously. The Packers I take pretty seriously. The Bears, I don't know if really the rest of the NFL knows what to do with, but you know there's something there. They got really good, young, talented players. I still think their offensive line is suspect. They addressed that in free agency. I don't think that's as easy as what some of my friends have told me it is. But they're going as all in as they possibly can over in Chicago. And they think that he could be a big piece for them. I think right now what Nick is thinking, there's a four-guy running back room right now if he signs. You have Sampson. You have Quinshon Judkins. You obviously have Jerome Ford. It was very interesting. Mary Kay said that there might be a possibility of a trade with Jerome Ford, which somebody brought up, like, who's going to offer for Jerome Ford? I think, first off, that people have been hard on Jerome Ford. I think he's been a little bit better than what we want to say he's been, because his name's not Nick Chubb. And anybody in the same backfield with Nick Chubb over these last 6-7 years was going to be overshadowed by the greatness of Nick. And that includes Jerome Ford. The other thing to it is that the Browns have traded once for Pierre Strong. You can get something for Jerome Ford, a fifth-round pick or something like that, to replace the fifth-round pick you traded Jerome Ford for. But you still don't know. While Nick looks great in the videos, you still don't know what you're getting back. And this could continue into the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, he looked good in videos last time.
That's a theory. He could sign by the end of the day, for all I know. But
Kenny, he looked good in videos last year before he started the season. And his carries, his yards per carry went from 5.5 to 3.1.
The only thing I can tell you with a hand in court, a hand raised in court, is that the Browns do definitely want him back and are making efforts to bring him back.
But did them taking the two rookies make it easy for Nick Chubb to go elsewhere?
It might have, but again, they have
to. So they kind of, if they really wanted Chubb, they shot themselves in the foot trying to get him.
But if they were going to bring Nick back, how long are they bringing Nick back for? I mean, these are two running backs that could play the next 4 years for you. You're hoping. Nick's a year-to-year basis now.
Mm-hmm.
After the foot injury last year, let's call it what it is. So the Browns, shooting yourself in the foot, especially in this situation, might not be the operative way to say it, but they have to protect themselves. But I can just tell you this. The Browns are serious about bringing him back. The Bears are very serious about bringing him in and are trying to make this push to bring him in. It's just going to depend on what's willing to offer more. I don't think if Nick were to take the offer to Chicago, he's always going to be beloved here. I think that everybody would love him to finish his career in Cleveland, but I still don't think a year in Chicago or 2 years in Chicago is going to change how he's seen by Browns fans or even by the organization long term. 216-474-0092. Back of the fan. You really don't think so? You don't think that there's a difference between golf down there and golf up here?
I think golf up here is way
better. I think there's a difference between the expense of getting your clubs to a course in the area of getting your clubs to a course down there.
I golfed in Florida. Mitch, we might have a conversation about Mitch coming up here eventually. Not today, but eventually. And I'm surprised to hear you say the golf is better up here than down there. I thought it was fun to say that I've golfed in Florida.
We get 90 days.
That's
Jameis
true.
Jameis told us. We've had Jason Nicklaus tell us.
And going
we're in
to
the window. We're getting there.
And he's talking about a potential vacation in July.
That's in the heart of the window.
It's the absolute worst time of the year.
It's also going to be 150 degrees out there.
And humidity.
It is pretty, man. You play golf here
the barometric pressures, Ken.
When those leaves change. Like, that got those big washouts down there in Florida and stuff. Like, there's nice things about Florida, don't get me wrong. But you get those, like, huge sand trap washout deals, and then you come up here and it's like, oh, my God, look at these trees. Look at the foliage. One of the fun things about playing golf with Lima is that he will stop the cart and take pictures of the fall foliage.
Oh, it's delightful.
He does it.
You're a leafer so on golf courses?
Yes, he is. Wow. I also left the leaves over the winter and it might have burned out my backyard.
You're a leaver.
Yeah. I'll tell you, this is teaching me, and I have a fraction of the yard you have. This is teaching me that you can never leave any leaves at the end of the year. You can't, not even one.
It wasn't my fault. On my kids, it wasn't my fault. I mean, it's my yard, so technically it's my fault, but it wasn't my fault. And I walked through the backyard yesterday.
So you're going to blame the trees?
A couple days ago. No, it wasn't the trees' fault.
I
get it.
Somebody else in my family's fault, but the family, the trees aren't part of the family.
You're going to sue him for $100,000?
No, I'm not going to sue them for $100,000. And I'm not going to throw expensive gifts into the swamp. I will only throw cheap gifts into the swamp. Yeah, those leaves burn out my lawn, and I got a bad problem in the backyard. Big problem. Might have to call Gus. Might have to plant some grass, because it is a mess. It looks like a murder scene back there now. My, you remember the head of Marv in Home Alone 2?
Oh, yeah.
That's what my backyard looks like right now, when he burned his head. That's what's going on there.
There's a big C burn into his palm of his hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We asked Brian Geltzeiler about LeBron. We started the show talking about LeBron because our buddy in front of us, Pat Boyle, overnights on Infinity Sports Network, was saying that this affects his legacy. And I said, that's balderdash. It doesn't. We don't remember. I mean, I don't think we will remember Belichick in 20 years at UNC if this lasts a year or two. We don't remember the I totally forgot in the argument about Michael Jordan in his final 2 years with Washington. Like, I think we just see the gooseneck, and a lot of us just forget. Like, he spent 2 years, which they were not bad years, by the way. They were effective seasons. We forgot he spent 2 years later on in Washington.
It wasn't like he went into free agency and ended up in Washington.
Uh-huh. It's true.
Break again and then kind of slowly came back in.
But that doesn't affect his legacy, him not being as good of a player as he once was.
Nobody ever brings it up.
What LeBron's going to need to do, though, like what Geltzeiler says, and you can go back and listen to this, 92.3thefan.com. What he says about Luka is true. Like, LeBron, and I don't know if he's capable of doing it because he's always been the center of attention. You are the center of attention for 22 years in your NBA career, plus before when you were an NBA player. That's hard to go away from. I think LeBron says he wants to do it. Can he do it? Can he hand off that baton finally and be the helper instead of the guy who's helped?
Well, that's the point of having him and Luka.
I've said this
together.
So many times, I'm sure you're going to roll your eyes at this too. What do I always say? There's one guy who's played with LeBron. That's Dwayne Wade. Everybody else has played for LeBron, including Kyrie. That's what got him so upset in the first place. Bosch, anybody, they've all played for him. They haven't played with him except for Dwayne Wade. And that takes its toll over time. Can he actually make Luka the guy he plays with? Or even, dare I say, play for? Is he going to be able to do that? Because if he's not, next year is his last year. If he can, then he might have another couple years. He might have two more years if he's able to do so. Because this is a whimper. I hate it because it doesn't go down now as the worst trade in sports history, because if you're bounced in the first round, like, Dallas can make it to the first round, so it's not that big of a damn deal, even though it's a huge deal. But in the grand scheme of things, is it as memorable as the Deshaun Watson trade? No. And I wanted Luka and the Lakers to go deep into the playoffs. If we can't win the finals, I wanted them to win the finals so they would be known as the worst trade ever made.
Does it matter in this debate? We don't spend a lot of time on this, and nor will we ever. But since it got brought up, does it matter how the Houston Texans do going forward in the debate? Like, if CJ Stroud wins the Super Bowl and it's with players from that should have been the Browns or could have been drafted by the Browns, does that change anything?
Well, we'll have to figure that out as time goes on. Here's Mike DeWine yesterday in a press conference, Fox 8 News on their I-team. Hit it.
I don't want to take that money from the general fund. We can raise the tax. We still won't be the highest tax in the country. And we can generate about $150 to $180 million every year to go into a fund, which can be used for sports stadiums.
That seems to me to be the best way to possibly do it, is to tax, like when we had the sin tax, audio again courtesy Fox 8, to build a stadium for the Browns. Is that the best way to do it, is to tax like the syntax was, to tax gambling
around,
or something else?
Now, wait a second. What if he turned around and said, anybody affiliated with sports, including you, sports talk radio hosts, you need to pay. You're talking about the team in the stadium every day. You
know
guys
what?
Pay it.
You know what?
And
so
you know what? If you listen
so
to sports talk radio,
so
you pay it.
No. You want to pay the sports talk radio tax, depending on how much it is? Fine. No, seriously. How many times have we gotten it? I do not live in Cuyahoga County. I live in Portage County. So when I hear this and people go, Ken, you don't pay the tax. And I go, well, I buy a lot of beer here. It doesn't matter. You want to charge me the tax? Go ahead. Charge me the
troll
toll.
Should Ken be forced to buy his beer here?
I like going to Sammy's in the Borough, unpaid testimonial. I like going to the Get-Go in the Borough, unpaid testimonial. Well, that's actually a paid testimonial, but still.
You're going to have to buy it cellophane wrap downstairs.
Because I tell you what, Mike DeWine, his political career is done after this, right? 78 years old. DeWine retiring after this. Might be the best thing for everybody that he's a lame duck, that he's not going further, so he might be thinking about legacy. Maybe it's the best thing for everybody that he's going for a legacy there. You want to talk about more of that in the podcast?
Absolutely.
Yeah.